Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm David.
And we're the MSA Crusaders. Hi, it's Daisy and David here with you on the MSA Crusaders episode 11. And today we are talking with Eric Bryant about his MSA.
Hey guys, great to be here. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for taking the time to come and visit with us, Eric. We really appreciate it.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Now, I would love to know how your life was prior to your MSA symptoms. What did you do?
I was a father of three, stepfather of three, grandfather of three. I was athletic in sports. I had athletic children that I coached all through life. I would golf and play tennis and very social kind of person. I've been in the software business all my life. I've been on stage speaking in front of 1,000 or 10,000 people.
Wow.
I've had, all kinds of moments, and then it definitely took a right-hand turn for me back in 2020 when all this craziness started.
Wow. That's I still, I mean, before MSA, I couldn't stand up in front of that many people and speak. There's no way. I'm hoping that we do it someday, but I'm behind the scenes, so I won't see other people.
You'd be amazed.
Eric, speaking of nervousness or tremors and shaking, is that a symptom you have right now?
I have it, but it's not the predominant symptom. Balance is
Right.
my predominant symptom. So,
Do the when you're in front of people, cause speeches or anything informal or formal, do your shaking and tremors get worse?
no, they don't. And my voice is still pretty strong, and I haven't got to that point. And I do get the fog though. When you get the fog, everybody thinks it's part of old age, but when you have MSA, it's a lot more predominant. When you know what you're going to say, you know what you're thinking, and it just won't come out.
It's just stuck down there.
Is absolutely stuck.
So, do you have MSIC?
Pete.
Oh, you do have the P.
Yep.
That would be MSA Parkinsonism.
There you go.
Right. And can you share with us your journey on how it began? What your sentence first started?
Sure. Well, let's put aside the fact that my symptoms really started 20 to 25 years ago with sleep issues, sleep apnea and REM sleep, and some problems acting out in my dreams. Because now that I know that, being a part of the MSA family, having gone through all that research, I know now that that was the beginning. But for me, really understanding and knowing what was going on, it happened in 2020. I was on a business trip to New York. I live in California, by the way. I was on a business trip to New York, and my wife kissed me goodbye at 9 in the morning. And then I flew across country, landed in New York, got my Uber to my hotel, got a hotel room. Did all that kind of stuff. Saw some of my colleagues in the lobby, and they offered me a cocktail. And I said, "I can't. I've got a headache, and I need to get some sleep." And then about 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up completely confused and lost. And I called my wife and said, "Where am I, babe?" And she said, "You're in New York. You're on a business trip." And I said, "Where in New York? I don't know where I'm at." And she told me to look around the room for a pad of paper or something that would said what the hotel was. And
Well, I'll bet you were scared to death.
it was the strangest thing ever. I completely lost the entire day. And she later, I don't know if it was her or my daughter, one of them said, "Take a picture of your face and send it to us." And I had a droop on the left side of my face. And they said, so they ended up calling my colleagues at the hotel, got the security up there. Next thing you know, the paramedics from Mount Sinai are taking me away with blood pressure of I believe it was 270 over 150.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was having what they thought at the time was a TIA or a mini stroke, and it really just was affecting me in a way I'd never been affected before, and that kind of started me down the road. And it was like, why? I don't have blood pressure problems. I don't have any health issues. Why all of a sudden am I and my space with a blood pressure of 270 over 150. And they told, the doctors later told me that I probably had that blood pressure all day. And finally my body just gave up and went into this TIA mode to warn me to do something. And we now look back on it, and that was when the autonomic dysfunction started, because my body had no idea that I was in distress. It had no concept that my blood pressure was so dang high, and didn't know what to do. Couldn't relay the message back to the body to do whatever it needs to do to stop it. And it just broke down. So that was April of 2020. Yeah.
And you're 61 right now. So that was about when you were 58, about 3 years ago.
Exactly. Thanks for reminding me. I'm 61, David.
I say very young 61 there.
Very young. It's like a 31 61.
Yeah. Right. 61 is the new 31 there.
I like that.
There you go.
So besides blood pressure, you know, that's an autonomic function that MSI messes with, unfortunately. Have you had any other autonomic issues?
Yeah, I've had some issues with my bladder, ED. I don't sweat anymore, which is the strangest thing. I don't know if you guys have experienced this part, but I can go through anything and not sweat. I recently went to the Mayo Clinic, and they put me through this sweat test, and I didn't sweat for. They put me in an oven. They were cooking me like a turkey. And I did not sweat.
I went to the same one. Yeah.
Until the very end, the last 2 minutes of the test, I started to sweat a little bit, but otherwise I didn't. And I don't know. It's the strangest thing
ever. So dangerous. So it's really so dangerous.
Of course, you need to be able to sweat, right? That's how you. That's how your body regulates its own temperature. And it's, I don't know, it's just one of those things in the autonomic dysfunction scale that, you know, we have to deal with.
It is true. We may smell like we sweat, but we don't sweat.
Yeah, we stink, but we don't sweat. It's weird.
Eric, do you have any other symptoms besides autonomic related to MSA?
Well, part of the autonomic dysfunction is the orthostatic hypotension, which is really one of my predominant symptoms, along with balance. So it's my understanding, and you guys are experts on this just as much as anybody is. Don't shake your head, Dave. I can see it. The orthostatic hypotension kind of falls under that umbrella, and that it's the strangest thing ever when you stand up from a seated or lying position and everything goes dark. You know, again, I'll go back to the Mayo Clinic last week. One of the autonomic testing was a tilt table.
Yeah.
You guys have been on a tilt table?
Yep, I have. At Mayo too, yeah.
So they take your blood pressure. And in my case, it was like 196 over something. And then they tilt me up. And little by little, they're taking my blood pressure every minute. And it's going down and down and down. And they're saying 170, 150, 120. And you know how far it went? It went down to 69 over undiscoverable.
Wow. Yeah, over 30 is confirmed orthostatic hypotension. Over 30-point drop, 15-point drop and above 15 to 30 is probable. Oh. But having a 100-point drop? Oh, my God.
I have 100-point drops all the time. It's and that's the thing that messes with your life the most is
you
when your body's going through all that, not only are you a fall risk and a blackout risk, but it's brutal. I'm so tired. I get so tired by the end of the day because fighting that up and down on the orthostatic hypertension. So that's been a real focus of my medical team, is to just help me with that part of it.
Yeah, they can give it to you to bring your pressure down. Your pulse goes too high.
Yep.
And they try to work with your pulse and your blood pressure goes up. So it's hit or miss.
Yep, it's insane. And my wife recorded that tilt table test. So she's got the ladies, the two nurses on film going 150, 120, 170, the whole thing. So people who don't believe it, and I would not believe it if I wasn't obviously a part of it. It's right there on the film. When they're taking my blood pressure, it's just dropping like a rock.
My highest has been 128. My top number.
128?
Oh, that's okay.
That's good.
That's really good.
My lowest can be 68 over 50.
Yeah.
Right.
Man.
It's crazy.
Yeah, see, I get the POTS, the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. Because if anything, my blood pressure will go up and not down, which does happen in MSA as well. But it's not the most common like Bearcats. But when my heart rate goes out of control, then the blood pressure follows suit, and that happens for me when I sit down and stand up all the time. So blood pressure, for your guys, is probably your number one thing, and mine's the heart rate.
Mine's the heart rate. My heart rate's like 119, 120.
Ooh, yeah, but mine will go from 35 to 190. It has no chill.
Your heart rate? Oh my god!
Yeah, it gets so low. Just
like
even
like
someone
else's heart rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normally it's about 50 all day long. My resting will be 55, and then I'll go to stand up and ding, it goes up to like 190, 200, like you're running a marathon. Oh, literally, yeah. That's where a lot of my orthostatic comes from.
Well, I, from experience, know that it affects speech and my communication. No. David can definitely agree with me here. But has it impacted your ability to communicate, or, you know, your friends and family have a hard time hearing you, things like that, Eric?
No, not to this point. I will say that they have mentioned that I speak with a softer voice. But that's because I used to be very, very you can't see because the camera's malfunctioning, but I'm 250 pounds. So I've been a big guy all my life. I was a freshman in high school at 160 pounds, and it just, so my voice always reverberated through my body, and I was loud. You can ask anybody from, my first grade teacher on, it was Eric's a loud guy. So the difference from what I was just to what I am now, people was like, oh, you're speaking softer, than you did before. But it hasn't really affected my speech at this point. I'm really the balance guy. It's all over my balance and gait. And
I think the volume starts the first part of the you're being able to use your voice. Because I started out being really soft too. And then all of a sudden it went to slurring, and then I have that exhausted MSA's talk where you're like, what are you saying over there?
I agree with that.
Well, we're all part of the family. We understand everything.
Exactly.
We are slur buddies.
Slur buddies. I like that.
MSA hits you two ways on the voice. One is it'll make you become more raspy, lower voice, but more raspy.
Right.
And that's when it's affecting your actual vocal cords and things like that. Otherwise, the slurring comes from the cerebellar part back here. When you start to develop that, then you're like, okay, now MSA has progressed to this part of the brain. So yeah, the low voice and the raspiness go hand in hand with MSA.
Yeah, I am MSAP, but my last MRI showed there was some shrinkage in my cerebellum. I can't say that word. But yeah, but I do have the raspy voice, and yeah, I can feel it here. Just so heavy and tired. And
now we can sing better though, because that raspy voice, it gives a nice country tone to it.
And then the softness. So it's like, hello there, can you hear me?
You'll scare the children with that one.
Right. So
I like Eric so much. He's going to co-host when I'm not here. This is awesome. Good come back.
I could never replace you, David.
Thank you.
And, our lives are challenging living with MSA from day to day. Could you describe some of the day-to-day challenges that you face every day with you?
I can tell you that we talk about the physical challenges, right? The orthostatic hypotension is just a bear. A little bit of the shaking is brutal. For me, walking like I'm drunk all the time, everywhere. You know, people just, I know what they're thinking, and because there's like, what's up with this guy? He's drunk, you know. And I bounce off walls. I pull to the right. I'm a pull to the right guy, so I tend to bounce off the wall on the right. And when I turn the corner, yeah, it's pretty. It's so frustrating and difficult all day long. But the hardest part for me was the mental part, because I was a very athletic person. I was very outdoorsy, and it's taken away a lot of that from me. Not all of it. I still participate in some sports like tennis, but I don't get to play it at a competitive level like I used to. And we, for example, this weekend, my wife and I visited some friends up in wine country, and we spent some time drinking a little wine and having some good conversations, but not to the point where I used to be able to. So it's changed my life in ways that makes it difficult for me.
Eric, you just mentioned outdoorsy. I'm going to have you fill in the gaps real quick. You mentioned something on your invitation we sent you, I think is awesome, great, beneficial, inspiring to anybody with it, not only MSA, but any disease disorder that's immobilizing in any way.
Wow.
If I read it right, you said, because of how, I'm paraphrasing, which is not a good idea for me, that basically as mobility goes down, you guys had purchased an RV trailer of some sort.
We have.
To go do outdoors items that way?
It's this weekend we took it with us. We call it Van Gogh. It's a little B-class van. You've probably seen the Mercedes Interstates, but ours is a Dodge Ram chassis. Same thing. It's got a couple of beds, a little kitchen, bathroom, and we take it with us everywhere. And it's really a portable house and a safe haven for me. So my wife, she drives. I don't drive anymore, not because I can't, but because I won't. I don't want to be that guy that passes out behind the wheel and takes out a young mother and her children or something.
Yeah.
So
I can understand that, how that makes you feel, though, because I haven't driven myself since 2019.
Yeah, it's brutal. But yeah, I don't like
the presidents.
Yeah, I just don't want to do it. It would. I wouldn't make it the next day if I hurt somebody. So
yeah,
but we did. We bought the B class, and it's fantastic. It's a medical place for me too. All my stuff, all my devices are there. All my pills are in there, and it's safe for me. It's close by. You know, I'm disabled now, so I can park close to the buildings that we go in and out of, and I can get to the van. I'm still mobile enough to get to and from the van when I need something, and it's been a godsend. I would, you know, obviously, it's affordability question for most people, but I would recommend it for anybody.
Speaking from someone that does most of their transportation by wheelchair, how are you guys, are you still able to transfer from getting out of the car easily, or is it a little job for you?
I'd say I could still do it in most ways. I wonder what's going to happen when my foot hits the ground, right? So I can turn on my seat, grab the oh shit handle,
get out of the car. I love that oh shit handle.
Come oh my God, I love that son of a bitch. And then it's when I touch the ground that it's difficult for me.
This sensor is brought to you by David and Daisy's podcast.
Oh, yeah. Am I not supposed to use that language, David?
You're fine. It's hysterical. I love you, Eric. Keep going.
Yeah, and it's the first step, right? You're wondering whether or not everything's going to go black on you.
That's what you go looking for in the car, though, when you're going to get out, after you turn yourself, you know, use that to pull yourself out, do you not, Eric?
In and out.
Yeah, in and out, exactly.
I've got to have that thing, yeah.
And I hate it when I go to get in the car and it's not there, and I'm like, oh, you can get in this car.
What the hell?
Unbelievable.
Over here, help.
I don't know what I'm going to do with you two.
I just wanted to know if he felt that there was anything he needed to clarify when it comes to MSA for our audience, because most of the people are misunderstood what NSA means. Do you have that problem?
My problem is nobody knows what MSA is, and that included most of the medical profession around here. It was very, I was unbelievably fortunate that I moved to a primary care physician recently, a new primary care physician, because mine moved from the hospital group that I'm a part of to another hospital group. So she said, you need to go to this lady and Dr. Love. And so when I met her, she had a little bit of a background in neurology, and she had a direct line to Dr. Mindy Bixby, who's been my savior, one of my saviors. She's a local neurologist, and she's also part of the team at Scripps College, who's been doing a lot of work with MSA and other Parkinsonisms and movement disorders. She runs a movement disorder clinic. So here we go. I'm in this time of life where I'm getting this horrible disease, and all of a sudden I'm introduced to a neurologist who completely understands me. That's something that most people don't get. They get bounced around, and you guys know it as well as I do. And I love every one of these doctors, but they didn't know what the hell it was.
Do you feel like you're telling, the doctor has no clue. So you're having to explain yourself to them, like what they should know, and be telling you? Do you feel that the roles are reversed?
In a way, it was, at first we were talking about orthostatic hypotension. Well, I was blacking out, and they were taking me directly to the emergency room, right? Because everybody gets scared. My wife was frightened, and, neighbors and friends are all scared. All of a sudden, one minute you're standing up, the next minute you're, a tree in the forest. And so I get to the emergency room, and they tap my vein with some water and fill me up and hydrate me. And they give me some lisinopril or something to lower my blood pressure. And once they get it to a certain point, they tap me on the head and say, go home. And then once we learn more about MSA and we research it, because we have to, because we have to live with it and be it's such a part of us, we realize that we have to start telling them, look, I'm either not diagnosed or I am diagnosed, but whatever point you're at, but you have to say that I'm dealing with MSA. And then you get the answer from some of them, what's MSA? And you're just, oh my God, I can't believe this. Did you just say what's MSA?
Yeah.
But they do.
I was going to say, the taking out the neurologist, movement disorder doctors, specialists, the only doctor or person who has known what MSA was when I talked to them was my eye doctor. That's crazy.
You mentioned earlier, Eric, that you were having problems with your bladder. Is that urgency or is it incontinence?
It's urgency and not knowing when I'm empty. So it's not a clear signal between my brain and my bladder as to when it's empty or full, right?
Mm-hmm. You stand up and it's like, there it goes.
Yeah, I equate it, and I don't equate it easily because I'm not female, but I equate it to when a woman's pregnant, and they're just walking along, and all of a sudden they cough or they sneeze, and look.
Yep.
I was full.
See, Dave and I've already went past the point where I'm a super puke catheter, and that sucker, that's my best friend now. I'm saying I carry my golden purse around with me everywhere, and that's what I nicknamed it. But beforehand, I was retention one day. I could not go. The next day, I had urgency. So I had to alternate the medications day by day, and it helped kind of maintain it. So.
Yeah, I got the, from my urinary, Eric, like you, I have the incontinence and the urgency, which this is going to go into the next question, by the way. I have the neurogenic bladder, but and the voiding disorder, whatever is a proper name for that. But, when I go to the bathroom now, I really sit down for everything. And I stay there for a while. I get my phone. Like you said, I don't know if it's empty or not. Like I told my wife the other day, a couple of days ago, I said, what I'm sick of? I can handle everything this MSA is throwing at me. I can handle it with easy. Well, easy for me to say that, but right. I can't stand going to a public bathroom at the airport, standing up, peeing in a urinal, and every time you put it back in, you pee yourself again. Like every single time, here comes another like half an ounce out, and you're like, you know what, this is frustrating. So
I'm a little dizzy though. I carry my straight cast in a bag, and yeah. Here's where I am now. I now believe, this is my opinion, in my humble opinion, I believe that routine is the enemy of MSA. So I very specifically have trained my bladder to go to the bathroom at the exact same time for every 4 hours each day. And it now follows my lead. And I use the catheter each and every time so that I know I'm empty. So now my routine is such that every 4 hours,
empty
completely. Yep. And I now sleep through the night, most of the nights.
I did that for a while, about a year, and then I couldn't do that anymore. I was getting too many UTIs.
Yeah, I do get a few of those, Daisy.
I had one from January till just about 3 weeks ago.
Oof. It's 9 months. It's like 9 or 10 months.
I know. It was horrible. Am I ever going to get rid of this?
No, you have to get like a Costco-sized Cipro.
Right?
we're done with you, Eric. You're out of here. Eric, similar to what you said, this 4-hour schedule for urinary, are there any other particular treatments or therapies that you have utilized to alleviate your symptoms with MSA?
Yeah, but that's obviously the urinary issues. Mm-hmm. Again, it's back to routine. I'm on Sinemet, is what they call it, the carbidopa-levodopa combination. Mm-hmm. Very specifically, very timely. When I miss it, I know I missed it. I'm also on Florinef, which is designed for that orthostatic hypotension. It really kind of creates a base on your blood pressure, so it doesn't bottom out quite as easily or quite as quickly. And again, very specific times, go to the bathroom. I even take a shower at the same time every day. And when I do this and I'm so routine, when you miss something, you know it. So when your body reacts to something, I can cut out one thing in my day and judge pretty clearly what effect it's going to have on my symptoms or my feelings, right? So without that routine, I wouldn't have. Yeah. If I go off schedule or if I change something, I can really feel what it means to my body. And that's important to me. I gotta understand my body.
True. Eric, are you participating or have participated in any like clinical trials, things like that for MSA?
Unfortunately, no. I was set to do that at the beginning of this month in Mayo Clinic with their mesenchymal study that was going to evaluate in MSA. And unfortunately for me, I'd had some damage to my back in the past and had a couple of fusions. Mm-hmm. And the metal and some bone fragments and some scar tissue were in the way of the injection spot. And unfortunately, they are very FDA backed. When they applied for this particular trial, they only applied to inject the stem cells between L1 and 3, and that's where all my damage is. So they couldn't move the injection spot because they applied for that injection spot. And
yeah.
It had to be very specific. So I was unable to participate in it, but just means, you know, keep looking.
Yeah. Do you have a plan B, plan C lined up that you're trying or you started looking for more?
Yeah. I have like plan, I don't know, F or G or something lined up. There's two coming up at the Mayo Clinic that they'll be a part of. One, the TAK 341, yep. And then the TEVA, the TEVA one. Both of those will be at the Mayo Clinic. And then there's one I'm looking at. It's rather invasive and it's kind of scary, but it's at UCI. And I told you I live in Southern California. So University of California, Irvine is like 20 minutes from my house.
Is it the GDNF?
Yeah, it's a gene therapy.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
Really?
That's what I applied for, but I got disqualified for.
It's a little scary.
It is. I had an acquaintance that I know that had the surgery like 4 weeks ago, and he said he's worse now than he was before he had the surgery. Oh. So that scares me. I don't know, like, maybe I wasn't meant to have the surgery.
Yeah, you know, I was just to add to that, Daisy. You know, I would feel horrible if I didn't say it, but since I've had MSA, I've only been sick 2 times. One was a kidney infection that they couldn't track down specifically. And the other one was just a simple cold. And both of those times that I got sick, no hospital, no nothing like that. The first kidney infection, I was cradling like a baby in a fetal position on the doctor's table in so much pain, discomfort. I mean, take MSA and times it by, you know, 3 or 4. The cold wasn't so bad, but I thought it was going to be like the kidney disease I had or kidney infection. And each of those 2 times, you know, I was at a certain point, I was like maybe at 60% health, and that kidney infection took me down like another 10%, and it never got better. It throttled me both times to where it wasn't progressively getting worse. It just said, here, knock you down a couple pegs.
Yeah.
And I never got better. So, you know, I have a hunch, you know, we talked about before, Daisy, but that, you know, they say people that go under anesthesia, like MSA people, should not go. And I, which I don't necessarily agree with, because you got to go under anesthesia for a lot of things. But people that with MSA that go under anesthesia,
it's very dangerous to say.
Yeah, they don't do very well. So I have a feeling that the anesthesia is such a hard hit to the system. You know, that's what the issue is with that gentleman. But you know, like me,
I hope so. I sure hope so. I hope it works for him.
Yeah, for sure.
It scared me. I was like, no.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would, too.
I had superficial cathetic surgery. And after surgery, you know, it was anesthetic. And yes, it took me a while to wake up from it. But also, my OT level dropped down to like 62.
Mm. Wow.
So after that, I was like a little bit skittish about going back under anesthesia. So the second suprapubic catheter surgery I had, I did not have anesthesia.
Oh, my God.
It was kind of scary. I took some Valium, though.
Do you have some left? Can you send some?
Once again, this censoring section is sponsored by Valium from Daisy Page's inventory medicine cabinet.
Yeah, sure. What kinds of medicine?
But that's true, though. Like, I still drink liquor. I'm not an alcoholic, but drinking liquor helps. It tames the tremors a lot. It makes the jerkiness of walking not so bad. I still got the issues, but at least I'm not flopping like a fish when I walk. So, you know, call it Valium, call it Quentin Penn or Adder or whatever. It, you know, it works. Certain things help treat the symptoms.
I was like you, David. I had the shakes really, really bad. My husband would say, you're shaking more than that lady over there, and I bet she's 90 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Since I started my ridery, I don't have the shakes at all, see?
That's pretty darn good right there. Yeah, I'm more on the David side.
Wow, we're all showing our hands on the video.
Ridery is a slowly released carbidopa.
It's last longer, right?
Yeah.
Yep, I've seen that.
Eric, have you tried this? Stay with me here. We have walking issues. We all do.
Oh, well, yeah, I do.
Obviously, they
just, right.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Have you tried fast walking, jogging, / minimally running while you have this disease? No, seriously, and I'm asking this because I have more issue walking than I do jogging. Now, I don't jog for very long, but if I had to jog to get out the rain in a parking lot, I could do it very easily. Walking, slow walking, that's the worst.
I'm much better at walking. You know, last weekend when I was up in wine country, I was walking across the street and a car came around the corner and it was heading right for me. And my natural reaction was to get out of the way quickly. And with this MSA, what happened was quite the opposite. I was stuck right where I was.
It's like I sunk into the cement.
It's like a brain problem. Yeah, like it shut off for a second, and I just froze.
Yeah.
And then I was able to move a little bit, but fast movements is not just something that I'm struggling with at this point. I can walk a whole 100 yards, no problem.
When I first started losing my mobility, I did do some like power walking, and it was a lot easier to do that than it was to walk.
Yeah, so slow walking is the end of me. If I had to walk, I cannot. I will not walk behind you. Like, you have to be in front of me. But trying to walk behind someone and keep their pace slower is the worst thing I've ever done in my life within this city. Trying to
I'm
walk.
I'm gonna rear end you.
Yeah, it's crazy because if I go too slow, I fall over.
Yep. Wow. It's the mobility thing. It's brutal.
It is. Eric, do yes. you have any
David.
I love you guys. Do you utilize any support networks? Like, for instance, around me, when I'm not traveling or whatever, I go to a Parkinson support group. It's the closest thing we have over here. One of our guests was talking about how great her church group was to supporting her, and we have families and stuff. Do you utilize any support networks, call them religious or healthcare or personal or whatever, that help you out?
Yeah, there's a couple of support groups. There's a couple of Facebook groups that I'm a part of. The MSA Alliance has been really good for me. The dysautonomia international.org group. We found a few, right? It was very frustrating at first. I'm preaching to the choir probably. It was really frustrating talking to people because until you actually had a support group of people that were either afflicted or caregivers for someone who was afflicted, nobody knew what the hell you were talking about. And you couldn't have a meaningful conversation about what you were dealing with, or ask questions of, you know, some of the things that you're going to be dealing with or what's upcoming. So a support group was incredibly important for me. And we spoke earlier, the fact that I found Dr. Bixby, then she led me to Dr. Tagliati, who runs the clinic at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. And this dude is just, he's right on top of the disease. And so then that's like a whole nother support group and family, because they really understand it from a deep perspective on the medical side. And you can ask a question to them and they know the dang answer. There you go.
Oh, look, you got me and Joey up there.
I was making sure it was the right one, because I noticed there are several MSA support groups out there. I was making sure MSA Alliance was the correct one. That's one where we met Mr. Phil, wasn't it?
Maybe. It was. Phil's the director. He's the one that created him and defeatmsa.org. And he's going to actually be on our show at some point in time, but he asked me and David both to be a patient advisor on there. I thought that was really neat. I'm really looking forward to doing that. I'm wanting to do whatever I can to help anybody else with MSA.
Yeah, it's a great bunch of people, man. When you find the group, it's you guys use that app TradeWing?
Yes, love it.
That one's been great. I've found some real good connections. You know, people that can help me. I mean, the whole
What's
point.
What's it called again?
It's called TradeWing.
Gary, get me hooked up on that one.
MSA Connect.
Yeah,
MSA Connect is really what it is, but TradeWing, I guess, is the company.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and so, but it's just a forum, right? It's a forum, and people talk to each other and message each other, and you know, ask questions of each other, and it's great to have.
It's great. Since David and I started this podcast, it's been really awesome to meet other people that are, I mean, I know it's not a good thing for other people, but it's nice to meet other people that have the same situations that we do, to can relate to us. And we can have meaningful conversations here on our podcast. And that's what we set this up for, that and to, most of all, to help create awareness, because there's so many people out there that just don't know what it is that we have and what we're suffering with.
Yep. That's exactly why I started my blog.
Yeah.
And I love that blog. I've read, I don't know how much I've read. I read it on a plane.
So you're the one.
I'm the one.
You're the one that read the blog.
She's the one pinging back to Southwest Airlines.
There you go.
I don't like that earlier. I wanted to mention when you said you use the wall to kind of put you back in the. Don't you picture yourself as a pinball machine?
Yep. Like a pinball, just bouncing. Or was it Pachinko or Pachinko? Remember that one where you drop the disc at the top and it just bounced off the pin?
Oh, yeah. Plonko or Planko or something like that.
Plinko, yeah. Plinko, I think it's Plinko, isn't it?
It's Plinko on TV with the Price is Right.
Yeah.
When you were growing up, it was with little balls, little metal balls, and it was called, I don't know, Pachinko or Pachinko or something like that. Same theory, just bouncing off the peg until it gets to the bottom.
Now, Eric, we mentioned your blog that you have. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's called Coping with MSA and copingwithmsa.com. And it's really for the same reason Daisy spoke of earlier. It's so people can get a better understanding of what it is. And it's really, I had originally designed it so that I could talk about MSA, talk about what I'm dealing with, and then chronicle my stem cell trial, which is now not going to happen. But
track your journey. You get to track your journey, what you're going through.
Right. And eventually, whatever trial I do get into, whatever treatment I get into, I'll be able to take care of that. But right now, it's there to educate, and I can ask people to go there, you know, and take a look at what MSA is so that we can have a better conversation. And hopefully, because it was so hard for me to find information at first. You either found deeply medical information, right? So white papers and all this kind of stuff from doctors.
I love those. I'm glad you said white papers. I read lots of those. I love those.
Yeah, they're a pain in the butt. By the way, yeah. This is really a good way to use ChatGPT.
Yes.
you put the medical terms into you ask ChatGPT to read the white paper, and then you ask them to summarize it like you're a sixth grader. So it'll read the entire white paper and give you a summary that you can really understand. Yeah. It's a great use for it. But it was either that or all the doom and gloom. That was really starting to get me depressed. Everything is all, there's no hope for you, you're just gonna die. And you're like, what the hell? So it was either deeply medical and you had to learn medical terms or Latin in order to understand it, or it was a bunch of people telling you, just forget it. Don't worry, there's nothing, there's no hope, there's no help, there's nothing.
That's the truth, yeah. What you hear.
I was done with that. So I wanted to get something out there that people could go to and say, number one, there's hope. There's all kinds of stuff being done now that was, you know, that wasn't there 10 years ago. There's a lot of doctors working on this thing, and you know, I'm comfortable there's gonna be some help right around the corner and soon. So we gotta make sure people know that. And then just get a better understanding of it. You know, what is it? Not only what does it do or where does it come from, but what does it do to you, to your body? What are you experiencing with it? And so that's what the blog's all about, is how I'm coping with it. That's why it's called Coping with MSA.
And you have a aficionado here. You have a very, I see you draw parallels to the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Yes. When I first, well, just like most, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's first, not MSA. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to that Dr. Bixby, she said, I'm not ready to call it Parkinson's. I'm going to call it a Parkinsonism. And we're going to do some more work on this, and we're going to figure it out. And then, of course, together with Dr. Tagliati in LA, we all discovered it was MSA. So, you know, I had that experience going into it.
Can I ask you a question really quick?
Of course.
Do you have any drilling problems?
During the day, but you don't want to see what my pillow looks like in the morning. That's for damn sure.
Mine's quite the opposite. I don't have drilling at night, but I have drilling during the day.
Oh, man. It's brutal at night.
Yeah, it is.
Drilling.
Eric, what is a message of encouragement or inspiration that you would like to tell people, those that have MSA, those that do not have MSA?
If you let me swear, I'd tell you how I really feel.
Please go ahead.
But, fuck MSA. Absolutely.
We believe in freedom of speech here.
Yeah, yep. Just fuck MSA. It's a bitch. It's out there. It's ruining, you know, it's ruining people's lives. But you got to stand up and punch this thing in the face every day. Every day you get out of bed, you got to take a shot at this thing. What, no matter what it is or how small. It's like if you watch a boxing match, it's not that one blow, unless you're Mike Tyson. It's not that one punch that.
I love Mike Tyson. Yeah.
Oh my God, he was vicious. It's a, you know, a series of left jabs and then a right cross and then back to the jab. And that's the way you got to approach this thing, is never, absolutely never give up. You know, Jimmy V, famous.
Yeah, there you go.
Fighting cancer, you know, don't give up, don't ever give up. And that's what you got to do with this. You just punch in the face every day.
A shirt.
Yeah.
That worth fighting for.
Oh, the ones I made? Oh, no, those are on the website, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Eric, that's why, I mean, I don't know you personally outside this podcast, but when I read on your comment that, you know, your love for the outdoors, and then you guys, you know, fortunately were able to get a camper of some type to make that still possible, I was like, wow, like, that itself, that example is the epitome of what you have to do with MSA. Because if you don't, like you said, if you don't fight this and find a way, your life with MSA will be sad, lonely, isolating, tragic. It will be horrible.
It is. And when I meet other people that are facing that and facing it that way, and oh my God, the people that are alone, I want to bring them into my house and get them a room. I really do. It's just, nobody wants to go ever through this. I mean, I have the world's greatest wife. She's unbelievable.
Whoa, wait a minute, Eric. Well, I got the world's greatest wife.
Them's fighting words, buddy. I got to tell you, because Gina she's just the greatest person I've ever known. And you got to have that. And my family's supportive. My friends are supportive. And, you know, we're doing everything we can to get up every day and punch this thing in the face a little bit. And
yeah.
I just think, you know, there's no other way to do this. Sitting back and letting it win, because it will. If you sit back, it'll win. It is one hell of an opponent. It is a beast.
I was on the bus on coming back from the parking on the airport, and it's standing room only. And, of course, the elderly were sitting down, and this gentleman, he must have been, I'm a bad guess of age, but I'll say 79, 80, something like that. And he stood up and he said, son, he's like, take my seat. Like I looked apart now. Like, don't be confused. No, seriously, like, don't be confused by the webcam here. But my body language, I have that, I don't want to make people mad. I have a disabled look. I was going to say a word, but you can't say it nowadays. Just disabled look in my body when I walk, like my hands are forward. Yeah, it's very weird. It's not horrible, but you can tell for sure. And this older gentleman, very old, twice my age probably, and he says, "Take my seat." And I looked at him. I said, "Sir, I appreciate you." I said, "I'm disabled, but not that disabled yet." I said, "I'm finding this thing out, so I'm going to stand." Right, and he laughed. His wife laughed. Beside him. They said, "Good for you." Right. And that's the point. Should I have been on a bus going to a comedy parking lot standing up with MSA? No. But I'm fighting it. And I'm not giving in to take that seat just yet. Right. I'll take the purse of getting on the plane early, because going down the ramp is very hard for me.
Oh, yeah.
But if you sit down and let this thing just punch you in the gut every time and you don't fight back, like me on that bus, and you with the camping, for example, this thing will take your life over so quick. And you see this on Facebook, on social media, on Twitter, where people are so angry at MSA. And in my own opinion, they have let it ruin their life because they're not fighting back with it.
I have to say, there was a time that I did give up because I lost my daughter stopped coming to see me because she couldn't handle seeing me the way I was. No. And then some more of my family stopped seeing me as well. So I started feeling so alone. And at that time, I just said, well, I might as well give up. I don't have anybody in my life anymore. And I progressed so quickly. But now that I have been fighting back, I don't see myself progressing that as quickly.
It can consume you so fast, Daisy. Just one incident, you know, like in your case, it was your daughter. That's so powerful on your psyche. And, you know, for all of us, we go through those moments, and you just have to fight that shit off.
She lives 15 miles from me, and I haven't seen her since last July. 15 miles from me, and I haven't seen her in over a year.
You know, there are people, and I'm going to get some hate mail, that are not mentally capable of standing up and handling situations.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never been that person. You know, I think a lot of us are gung-ho, and it is what it is, bringing MSA on. But there's people who can't handle it, and there's people who know they can't handle it. And Daisy, I would caution for the difference of this latter. Sometimes it's better for some people not to put themselves in a situation where they know they can't handle it.
It's not happening.
Well, no, they know they can't cope with it. They're not that strong with that yet. There's a difference between a person who says, you know what, let's take this for example. When I was young, living on New York Street in Indianapolis, my neighbor's brother was mentally disabled, for lack of better words, politically correct, very completely, and we would still hang out when he was there. We of course he'd beat us up sometimes. He had no idea what he was doing. But, you know, we're able to see past that. It is what it is. You know, it's not going to get any better, but let's still have fun. Let's still progress with our lives.
Enjoy life while I can.
And, you know, there's some people who feel embarrassed to be around somebody who, for example, is mentally disabled or MSA. Those are two very different things, though, Daisy. So, you know, there's times I haven't gone around certain people because I know, like, you know, I might get into the fight. You might hit the diary, you might shoot somebody, whatever. So, unfortunately, you know, there's people who have never heard of MSA, and they don't know what to make of it. But time will come around, and people will see it if they want to. But, you know, you can't put a time clock on it, you know, an ultimatum or anything. It takes everybody's different how they cope and when they cope, for sure.
No,
yeah, there are more victims than just those who are afflicted.
Yeah.
It affects.
That's very so true.
Many, affects so it, many family it, and friends.
And to that point, Eric, how does your wife and kids deal with it? I mean, how do they feel about it? Do they see it? Do they notice it? I mean, I'm sure they would.
Yeah, they see it. They notice it. My wife, like I said, is the greatest woman ever, and she stays on the positive side with me. My kids, different ways, you know, there's five children, and they all deal with it in different ways. The girls seem to be better with it than my boys. But overall, they all understand, they're all supportive. Some ask questions and some don't. So, you know, to Daisy's point, people can all, they all take it a little bit differently. They all handle it a little bit differently. It's difficult, especially, I said before, I was a big guy, right? So I was 250 pounds, you know, 6'3", athletic, all that stuff. So when you see your dad or your friend going from that to someone who needs assistance, so struggles to walk, I need an arm to hold on sometimes when I go, that rail is important going up and downstairs, you know? When you see the difference in that from what they can remember, it makes them sad, and they can't deal with the sadness. And I understand it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I published the blog post that I wrote on, you know, as hard as it is to deal with as you're looking at me as a friend, all I ever need is just somebody to hug, you know, just give me a hug and talk to me. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, you know, I taught my daughter, my oldest daughter, I got 12 and 18, and I told her for one vacation, I said, you know, because she, as a parent, my job is to protect her, make sure she's on the straight and narrow path, you know, and not going after getting pregnant at 18. You know, we're in her life for pregnancies early, or drug abuse and crazy things, you know, driving drunk and stuff. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm assuming you're doing good. You look like you are. You have never disappointed me yet in your life. Because I did had a minor disagreement with her about something, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm at the point in my life now where I don't want to lose you. I don't have time to lose you. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to yell at you and cut you off from the family because you do something, because I don't have that much time to, you know, to still engage with you. I said, but I'm definitely here to educate you and teach you life lessons that will last well beyond me. You know, and that's something that's hard for, especially speaking as a man, to lose your manhood, you know, to be less of a man. You can't fix your cars anymore. You can't, I need to go up on the roof and get these tree limbs off my roof and clean my gutters. But, you know, I shouldn't be doing that. But, you know, it's really hard when I'm an adult. Don't do that, anybody. Baby. Yeah, no, I probably will. Yeah. Just like, well, I'm going to figure it out one way or the other. But it's hard. You know, you got to transition from being that macho person at 6'3", 250, and I'm 6 foot, 180 right now, but you got to change, and you got to be more of a compassionate, you know, tender loving person than being that hardcore physical guy that we're used to be doing. So, yeah, I feel for you, you know, especially having more kids than I do and things like that. So, it's something, you know, dealing with the kids, and like my youngest is 12, and she doesn't know what it is, right? She knows MSA, you know, I assume she's just, you know, dad's getting worse. You know, I was oblivious when my dad was sick too. You know, he got worse and worse for 14 years, but I saw him lose himself over 14 years until his death. But, you know, when I was younger, I didn't appreciate it. I didn't really care so much, and I was oblivious to what it actually was and what he had and what he went through. So, you know, probably only until I grew up in my late early 20s did I actually, you know, when he died, when I was 19 and later, did I realize, like, oh, this is something serious. I had the mental capability, I had the academic resources to see what he was going through. And it's tough for kids, especially younger ones, to see you, you know, going through such an awful disease.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We know that's coming.
I will say my dad was very nice for making custom wood canes. He would order them. Custom wood. Such about men, older men always want custom wood walking canes. And sure enough, I found one on Amazon. It was like a hook for like a sail ship, the anchor or whatever. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'll see a picture of it. But following my dad's footsteps.
Thank you for coming and visiting with us today. It's been really nice talking with you.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I had a good time. And it was, like I said, this is cathartic for me, man, being able to talk about this kind of stuff. It's great to have an outlet for it.
Yes, well, I couldn't agree more.
Will you come back after one of your upcoming clinical trials or therapies?
Absolutely. Anytime you guys want me to, I'll be back.
We'd love to.
We'd love to have you.
Thanks, Daisy. David, take care.